we figure that out already. Okay, it's on.
Okay, this is Hanukkah. I would like to just begin by thanking everybody for joining us at our annual Hanukkah Mitzvah. Particularly, I would like to thank all those that were involved in putting it together, the Kol Rabbis, Rabbi Yonatan Zakum, Rabbi Holchat, Rabbi Yaakov Sturman, Rabbi Yitzhak Grossman, our very dedicated staff, as well as Mrs. Sarah Malka Winter, Mrs. Elise Jacob, for all she does for the Kol, and for all the people that helped set up. Before I introduce our speaker, who we're all anticipating, I'd like to share just a quick thought that the Yontif of Hanukkah, really a well-known idea based on a very famous question of the Beis Yosef, perhaps the most famous question of all of rabbinic literature. Why do we have 8 days of Hanukkah, 8 Neris? Really seems the math is simple, but if you have one flask of oil that's supposed to last for one day, lasts for 8 days, so the Neris is not 8 days, but rather 7 days. And there's many, many beautiful and thought-provoking answers to this. But I want to just share one, even though I believe that it's well-known, because I think that its message is very powerful. And the Chagim, the Yom Tovim, is not just the time to be inspired momentarily and temporarily, but to take the ideas of the Chag with us throughout the year. I think that this thought is a very powerful thought that could accompany us. And the thought is that through the Nisim, through the Nes of Hanukkah, when HaKadosh Baruch, when God says to the oil, I give you the power not to just burn bright for one day, but instead for 8 days. When we contemplate and when we reflect on that, so we're able, through the miraculous intervention of Hashem, to see in everyday life the miracles and the nisim that abound and that surround us. And it's for that extra appreciation, that understanding that we come away with through the miracle of Hanukkah, that we add another candle, another day to Hanukkah, and we take that with us, that idea that even in our very mundane existence, it doesn't seem to be a miracle. We get up in the morning, we breathe, we eat, we drink, we walk, but we understand that all these things are really unbelievable manifestations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of His creation. In fact, the Rambam, Mishnah Torah, Yesodiyah Torah, says reflecting on the Bria, on nature, on creation, it brings us to love of Hashem. So it's a very special opportunity to contemplate on this miracle of Hanukkah and to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our everyday lives. And so too, speaking on behalf of the Kol, we'd like to take the opportunity to thank all those that are with us every day as part of the Kol family, our supporters, those that come to the classes, those that are along for the journey in our ever growth of trying to discern and understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's beautiful Torah and to cherish His mitzvahs. So thank you. We have a very wonderful opportunity to hear Rabbi Ari Storch, the wonderful and respected rabbi in Baltimore, Congregation Or Simcha. He's a musmuch. He received his ordination from Neri Zol, as well as a bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in Talmud HaKalah. As well, Rabbi Storch is the author of Tzaras Aryeh and the Secrets of the Star. Without further ado, I call on Rabbi Storch.
Thank you very much for those wonderful words. Thank you all for coming. And I thank the Greater Washington Community Call for hosting me, Rabbi Winter and Rabbi Zachin specifically. I don't see where he is, but I'm sure he's somewhere. It really is an honor to come here and speak this evening, and I thank you for this opportunity. Several years ago, I published a book, The Secrets of the Stars, and it discussed how the Torah is encoded in the night sky. You could read the stars and see somehow the message of the Torah is being represented, the storyline, through the various stars and constellations. And after it was out for several months, I realized that I forgot to put in one chapter. And that chapter was why. I put in the storyline and I showed how it can be seen, but I forgot to put in why. So this evening, I would like to take a few minutes, hopefully, and explain the why. Perhaps we'll get a little into the how. And then to focus, just to give a few examples on something from last week's Parsha, and then a message of Hanukkah, as told by the night sky. So what do I mean that the Torah expresses, the stars express the message of the Torah? Rabbeinu B'chayim, one of the great Rishonim, one of the great luminaries of yesteryear, explains in his invaluable commentary. He says that Hashem willed the universe into existence, and that will is what continues it to exist. And God is not bound by time, and therefore His will expresses past, present, future, all at once. And he says, there are really three realms. There are three realms of the universe that God created. There's the lower realm, and that's the world in which we live, made of physical matter. There's the upper realm, the world where the angels exist, the malachim. And it's from there that the prophets receive their prophecy. As Rabbeinu B'chai expresses in the Rambam as well. Any nevuah, any time God speaks to a person, with the exception of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's always through a malach. It's always through some sort of angelic medium. It comes through that upper realm. And then there's this in-between world, referred to as the world, or the realm, of the mazalim, the constellations of stars. You see, in the ancient times, this is how they understood science. This was the science around them. They saw the stars, the movement, they were in tune with that. They noticed how the seasons connected with the different motions of the sky. The sun would rise from this part of the sky in this season and that part. And they understood the harmony of the universe through that. And therefore they related God's will through that and saw it as a message. Says Rabbeinu B'chayim, therefore, the three realms, the upper, middle, if we call it the mazalos, that constellation realm, and lower, all being just expressions of God's will, all are identical. They all say the same thing. The entire message of God's will can be divined from any one of those realms. They're all parallel. The difference is only how physical it appears. The more physical that manifestation of God's will, the more difficult it is to pierce and understand what He wants. The higher up you go in the realms, and by higher I mean the more spiritual you get, the less physical, the clearer one can understand God's message. And therefore the clearest message ever that God gave to humankind was when He spoke directly, word for word, to a human. And that has happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. the one through whom our Torah was given. Our Torah is the clear message of God. It ascends all the realms because it came from God Himself. The second closest thing to that is when a Navi, when a prophet comes and says, God spoke to me through an angel. Always through an angel, through a mouth. God spoke to me and gave me a clear message. It's not as clear as the one given to Moshe. It's not the one that's word for word. But the message is spiritual, it resonates. And there's something that Navi can bring forth and inspire and lead. And as you continue lower and lower down the rung, there are different levels of angels, as the Rambam expresses them in his Mishneh Torah. Different levels, each one a little less clear as to how it's expressing God's message. Until finally you get to the point where you're no longer in that upper realm and you're bridging into this realm of the mazalos, the stars. Because we look up to the stars, and even though they are made of matter, they really are physical entities, mostly hydrogen and helium. They really are. But the human looking towards them sees symbolically through them as if he or she is looking into the heavens. And it's that symbolism, that message, that Chazal understood God has encoded his message into those stars, the same as he encoded them through the angels, and the same as somehow encoded in the world around us, if you just know how to listen. The stars being a little bit higher in spirituality than the world around us, a little easier perhaps to understand the message, but still, as I said, not as clear as that when brought forth by a prophet. It is of note, the Torah says explicitly, you're not allowed to divine the future through the stars. It's something that's not for us. The Torah says, Hashem says to us, don't divine my will. Don't try to speak what you're supposed to do for the stars. Do you know why, says Hashem? Because the next pasuk, after stating that, in Sefer Devarim, in that parsha, Hashem says, because I've given you Nevi'im, I've given you prophets, I've given you a clear picture. You don't need to go to the stars to know where you find your inspiration. Your inspiration comes from me, says Hashem. But for others, who may not have a Navi, then the stars are fine. That's what the Torah says. Looking at the past, you should be able to still see the Torah's message. That's not prohibited. And it's so interesting, because when you look at the night sky, Chazal, as most cultures of their time, understood that if you look at the night sky, you'll see myriad of stars. And it's difficult to discuss them with another person. You'll say, I'm looking at that star over there. Which one? I can't really tell. Well, chart it out. If I want to explain to you something about the United States, I'll take out a map and I've drawn the lines, I've carved it into states, and I can say I'm talking about Maryland, I'm talking about California, wherever it is that I'm talking about. We've delineated specific areas and given them names. So people have done that throughout history. And the times of Chazal, it was understood that there were 48 distinct regions in the night sky. 48 regions, 48 suros, 48 images. And through these 48 different images, somehow God's message is reflected. Then, in addition to the 48 images, there are 7 planets, say Chazal, say the Greeks, say all ancient cultures. Because if you look in the night sky, there are 7 objects that you can see with your eyes, and you do not need a telescope or binoculars, that move independent of the stars. They move across the night sky from time to time. The sun, the moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. The seven ancient planets move across the sky. And it's the combination where they are that somehow they noticed symbolism and understood a message that God was relating to them. 48 and 7. But we're told, don't look to the stars if you want a clear message. And therefore Hashem gave us, say Chazal, 48 prophets instead of the 48 images. And 7 prophetesses, 7 female prophets. 48 and 7. And it's of note that the sun, moon, and planets only move through 12 of those 48 constellations, 48 regions of the sky. Those are considered the more primary images. That's what's referred to as the zodiac. What's your sign? There aren't 48, there are only 12. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, ends up in 12 shvatim. 12 shvatim right there. But how many nations came forth from Avram? If you count them, you have 12 tribes, and you have 36 others that come from Avram. Again, 48, with 12 being a very distinct, primary, chosen sect. And then you have Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Leah, and Rachel. 7. 7 individuals who put everything in motion. You have 7 books in the Torah. What? I have 5. Okay. Got to make this work, right? There are 7 books in the Torah because Chazal say that Bamidbar actually is split into 3 books. If you ever notice in Parshas Ba'alosa, when we read that Parsha, there's a segment that's offset in the Torah. Vayhi b'nsoa aron, vayomer Moshe. And Chazal tell us that which precedes it and comes after it are 2 different books, and in and of itself is its own book, totaling 7 books of the Torah. So there are 7 books. How many parashas? 48. When you join all the double parashas. And there's a very distinct set of 12. Maisa of the sin and the bonin. We're taught that everything that happened to our forefathers represents that which happens throughout history to the Jewish nation. And there are 12 books in Bereishis. Of the 48, there are 12 parshas, excuse me, in Sefer Bereishis. 48 parshas, 12 primary that have everything included in them amongst the 7 books. Over and over, these are just a few examples of how you see the same message. And that message, perhaps in some way, can be found as well in the night sky. What do I mean it can be found in the night sky? So now I've given over some of a little nugget, there's much more, but a little nugget of what I forgot to put in the book. Now, a quick example, and then we'll talk about Hanukkah. A quick example just from last week's parsha. This one didn't take too much creativity to figure out how to divine from the Torah where to look into the night sky, and that I should be looking to the night sky very clearly to find this example. As we read this past Shabbos, Yosef was a dreamer, and he had these visions of grandeur when he would become a king. Metaphorically, first, he and his brothers were bundling wheat, and then their bundles bowed to his bundle. And then the second dream that he has, a dream for which he was hated by his brothers, because they didn't like that he was seeing himself more exalted than they, They already hated him because their father loved him more than he loved them. Some sibling rivalry going on. But this dream really put it over the top. What happened? He saw the stars. He saw 11 stars. They're no longer wheat bundles. There's stars in the heavens. And the stars are bowing down to Yosef. They're bowing down. And the sun and the moon were coming and bowing at his feet. Doesn't take much to see the symbolism that Yosef was alluding to his brothers and parents. His mother had passed by that point. But her maidservant had not. And Yosef was describing what would eventually become an event that happened in Egypt many years later after he'd been sold and then rose to power and was supporting his brothers and father and family and nephews and nieces with the food, the produce of Mitzrayim. And they came down and they all bowed at his feet. There's a very big difference between the two dreams. Not just that one takes place in a field in the lowly earth, and one is exalted in the sky. But in the first dream, if you pay attention, the sheep are bowing to Yosef's bundle. La'aluma si, to my bundle. But in the second dream, they're mishtachavim li, they're bowing to me. They're not bowing to a bundle. They're not bowing to something that represents Yosef. They're bowing to Yosef. They're bowing to him. The stars of the heavens are bowing to him. Keep in mind, this actualized at a point in time when Yosef was giving them food and sustenance, and without him, they would have died of starvation. There were 11 brothers. And there's a sun and a moon, there are 11 stars. As I mentioned, there are 48 different images in the night sky. You can open up Ptolemy's books, if you'd like. Or you can open up Ibn Ezra's Reishis Chachma. They're pretty close. They're expressing nature and how it resonates. How they perceived it. And when you look, perhaps, in the Reishis Chachma, the Ibn Ezra's work, he describes there's this one constellation. Remember, that's just a region of the sky. The connecting the dots of the stars takes a lot of creativity. And he says there's this one region that represents the southern fish, Pisces Austrinus. That's how it's called in contemporary times, and as it was called in Greek times. Not getting to the Hanukkah part just yet with the Greeks. Pisces Austrinus. I'm sure most of us are familiar with Pisces, with Dagon, with the Mazel of Adar, the constellation that represents towards the end of the winter, getting close to the summer or the spring. This isn't that constellation. This is a different constellation called Pisces Austrinus. And this constellation is comprised of 11 stars. There are 11 stars, distinct stars, in this constellation. Now, obviously, when you look at the night sky, if you can get away from the city, you'll see that there are many more stars in any one area of the night sky. But we're talking very distinct, bright 11 stars that people would envision created the appearance of a fish. With a lot of creativity. Pisces Austrinus. Just on top of Pisces Austrinus is the constellation that I'm sure we're all a little more familiar with, especially those who may be more familiar with some pop culture going back 60s. Aquarius is right above it. Aquarius, in Hebrew, Dali, referred to as a bucket. Depicted as a young boy taking a bucket of water and pouring it out. And the water runs down from Dali, from this bucket, of aquariums and weeds, and it ends up in the mouth of the fish, of Pisces austrinus. And the storyline is told by the sky that the ancient cultures envisioned was that this fish is going to dry out. It's going to die if it doesn't receive sustenance. But these 11 stars are at the feet of Aquarius, being sustained by the water that it pours to them, and dependent on that. Aquarius is the 11th zodiacal constellation. If you start from Nisan, if you start from the first month, which is Aries, and you go down the list, you'll get to Dali, you'll get to Aquarius, and it's the second to last. The second to last constellation. Number 11. Number 11's son to Yaakov is Yosef. Chazal say that Yosef is represented by Aquarius. Yosef is referred to as being a young person, a nar, and Dali. The word for Aquarius, the Hebrew word, when spelled backwards, is Yelid, is a boy, a young boy. So the Medrash tells us that Yosef is represented by Aquarius. And so what we see now is 11 stars bowing, so to speak, at Yosef's feet, being sustained by him in very similar fashion. And there's a reason why this dream was different, why they're bowing, the stars aren't bowing to Yosef's star, just like the bundles are bowing to Yosef's bundle, because the 11 stars, each is an individual star that makes up one constellation. They're not bowing to one star. They're bowing to an entire constellation, which is represented as a young man pouring out water. So they're bowing to an image of a man, not a star, all of them put together. That's perhaps the difference in the dream. And the sun and the moon come, and they're bowing down at Yosef's feet. As I mentioned before, the seven planets, the seven things, Kofei Leches, as they're referred to by Chazal, the seven mobile stars that do traverse the night sky, sometimes day sky when it's the sun, they traverse through these constellations. When they pass through Aquarius, that's one of the 12 that they actually pass through. If you look at their path, referred to as the ecliptic, you'll notice it cuts on a downward motion right down by the knees of the boy pouring out that water. They're coming as if they were bowing down towards Yosef in submission. I don't know. I don't know if he was referencing the night sky or if he was merely telling the dream. I don't know what they understood.
Maybe you're understanding how the stars reflect reality. The stars are reflecting reality. The notes are showing them, is showing them reality. Have you been able to see it?
Again, Nebuah is greater clarity of things that can be seen in the stars. So Yosef's dream, quasi-Nebuah, presumably was on a higher state and a clearer message to those who understood it than the night sky. I don't know that he would have needed to reference this, which was a less clear picture to those who understood it. Assuming the brothers understood with clarity more, you know, than I would understand, at least, when reading the Parsha, I don't know that he would have needed to reference it, but yes, I'm suggesting that his chalom, his dream, and this night sky are saying the same picture of what happened in Mitzrayim later. They were both projecting that it would happen, and now we look in hindsight that it's already happened. So, that night sky, that's just one snippet from last week's Parsha, and there's many, many more. Going from the 12 Shvatim, a little bit was discussed here, to the Mice and Merkava, to Yechezkel's glorious vision of God's grandeur can be seen as well. Tremendous insights can be gleaned from the night sky. It's Hanukkah now. What message, what's one of the messages we can see in the night sky or the day sky, something from the celestial movement that can help us understand Hanukkah, can help us understand the message of Hanukkah? Hanukkah is at a time when the days are becoming longer. Hanukkah always starts, well, I shouldn't say it doesn't always, this year not so much, but it generally starts just before the solstice and goes through the solstice. Certainly the way we refer to the Hebrew months, we refer to the month of Teves, the winter month, as the start of winter. The start of winter is when the days actually start to get longer. It happens around December 21st every year. It's the shortest day of the year. Incrementally, it's getting longer. Little by little, you probably notice the Shabbos is starting to get a little later each week. Not by much. Before you know it, it'll be fairly late. Hanukkah is a time, they are the shortest days of the year, but they're starting to get longer now. They're starting to be more daylight. The Medrash tells us that Adam had done his Aveira in Gan Eden. He ate from the tree. And he's standing there at the end of the day, and he's watching the sun set. Realize, he hasn't been there the past few days. He's kind of new. He's the new kid on the block. He doesn't know that the sun goes down and comes right back up the next morning. He doesn't know that yet. And he's watching the sun go down and the world get dark. And he starts to tremble. And he says, what's going on? I didn't have air, the whole world's being destroyed. I need a little consolation. The next day the sun rose again. But every day was then getting shorter and shorter. Because if Rosh Hashanah was on the first of Tishrei, like Rabbi Yehuda says, and we express in our davening on Rosh Hashanah, then he was going into fall. He's in the Northern Hemisphere. He wasn't in Australia. So he's watching the days get shorter and he's saying, I did something horrible, I destroyed the universe. The days are going to get shorter and shorter and shorter. And then one day there's not going to be light. And the whole universe is going to fall apart. And it's my fault. That which God took time, 6 days, to create this beautiful universe, and I destroyed it all. And then one day, the winter solstice, it stopped. And Adam realized, wow, all of a sudden the day started getting longer. Minimally. But a little bit longer each day. And when it stopped, on that day, he had a simcha. He was very happy. And he lit candles for 8 days to recognize, I didn't destroy the world. It's going to come back. And I have a second chance. I messed up. The world isn't what it used to be. But I shouldn't give up. There's hope, and I can make a change, and I can restore things to the way they used to be. It's not what it was, but thank God it's not what I thought it was going to be either. So now let me make it into what I want it to be. 8 days, he lit candles. Hundreds of years later, thousands of years later, the descendants of Aaron HaKohen, the Chashmonaim, come in and retake the Beis HaMikdash, which was defiled with Avodah Zarah, with pagan idolatry throughout. And the Mizbeach had been used for inappropriate idol worship. They had to take the stones and put them in a separate chamber and close it off because it was unusable. And it took 8 days for them to get the Beis HaMikdash in working order. I'm not saying it took him 8 days to repair it. Presumably it took him a lot longer. But it took him 8 days to get things at least working, functional. And during that time, with the spears of the Chasmonaim put together, and perhaps cast with some tin on top, a very bare-bones menorah, they witnessed this glorious miracle of the oil lasting for 8 days. The days had been getting shorter and shorter, and now they're getting longer. Think about it. We had a second Beit HaMikdash. We came back to Yerushalayim after the first destruction, but we weren't an independent nation. And we didn't know if we would be for a very long time. But things were okay. They were working, they were going along, and we became comfortable. And the Greeks came in, and we became a little too comfortable. And Jewish culture started to erode. And we started identifying more with Greek culture than the Jewish culture. And in addition to that, the Greeks started oppressing us and trying to eradicate Jewish culture. And now all of a sudden, all hope looked like it was going to be lost. Jewish, the light of the Jewish nation, its culture, its history, the Torah, was going to be extinguished. And a few people stood up and said, this can't be. And it was specifically during this time that they were victorious. To show you, no matter how bleak it looks throughout our history, no matter how many times you say, this is it, this is the end, the days are shorter and shorter, there's no way this is going to turn around. The universe is falling apart. And these are the rules of physics that are going against me, as Adam thought. All of a sudden, something happened. A slight change. A small group of Chasmonaim stood up. Adam noticed one day that it didn't get shorter. It got a half a minute longer. A very minor change. But that spark can then ignite and light a menorah for 8 days. And ignite the hope in an entire nation that then was able to have an independent Jewish nation for a duration of time. That's the hope that we're still waiting for. And that's the hope that guides us through all of our exile. When we look also at the month, Chazal expressed the life cycle really of a human through the month and the pictures of the zodiacal signs. Not going to go through all of them, but just quickly, Chanukah starts in the month of Kislev. Sagittarius is an archer who's shooting a bow. And then goes into Teves, the month of Teves, which will start on Friday, which is Capricorn, which is a young goat, a kid. And Chazal say that that archer is one who's weary from battle. He's one who's worn out and coming basically having been suffering defeat. But he shoots an arrow that allows new life. He shoots it to a faraway place where he can start again. And that's why the next month is this young kid, an immature animal, ready to grow and develop. Not develop, but you can start anew. That's what Chazal in Brayta de Mazalot mentioned. This time, no matter how you look at it, from the sun, or whether it's the zodiacal signs, it's a time of a new beginning, when hope was lost, and now it's reignited. That's one of the messages of Chanukah. The Jewish nation, how many times in our history should we have been written off? How many times would natural courses of history have had us extinguished? And yet that flame flickers, and not only that, many times from that it begins to grow and flourish. I thank you again for this wonderful opportunity. I hope I haven't bored you too much. If talking about the night sky. I don't know how many of you fell asleep by now. But thank you again. Happy Chanukah, Pesach, and Chanukah. Thank you so much.
But I'd like to thank Rabbi George for his inspiring words and for his tour through the heavens and the cosmos. I'd like to acknowledge the presence of Rabbi Ryan. And everyone is welcome to join us for more teaching, for music and dancing. A fabulous Hanukkah.